there's a reason why it's called martial arts and not martial science. Welcome to my dojo. This is Kung Fu Pizza Party, and I'm your host, Brandon Knight. And today, we're headed back to the arcade, this time looking at one of the earliest live-action adaptations of a video game. This is 1994's Double Dragon. Here on Kung Fu Pizza Party, I seek to deliver high-flying action in 30 minutes or less and serve up some wisdom one slice at a time. Double Dragon debuted in arcades in 1987 and became known as the grandfather of the side-scrolling beat-em-up style of video games. This is the one that started it all, folks, or at least revolutionized it, popularized it, and would go on to become a very successful franchise. Here in 1994, when this movie comes out, they have expanded into other forms of media as well, including a cartoon series, a comic book series, and was on their fifth installment in the game series by this point. And the series lives on. Just last year in 2025, another installment in the Double Dragon franchise dropped. But here's the thing, folks. Sadly, Double Dragon, both as a franchise and for this movie as well, but even at a high level as a franchise, Double Dragon serves as, I think, a really good reminder why companies need to protect and value their IPs. If there was ever a lesson to be learned from the history of Double Dragon, it's that Technos didn't give a rip about continuity or how their characters were depicted or represented or anything like that. All they cared about was getting paid. It was all about the money for Technos early on when Double Dragon first debuted. It was very successful. Don't get me wrong. It was one of the hottest games in the arcades with Double Dragon and particularly Double Dragon 2, The Return. But by the time you get to the third installment, yes, three games in with Double Dragon 3, The Rosetta Stone, yes, that is the actual name of that game, the wheels were already starting to fall off the wagon, because as the game would get ported to other consoles and also just some changes, or not even changes, but just decisions that were made for the third game, likenesses being changed, the addition of a third brother that was never seen after that game, as the game would be ported and just new installments would come out, Technos didn't care about continuity. Technos didn't care how their characters were being represented. There was continuity errors left, right, and center. And so even though this game came out in 87, the movie came out in 94, within that 7 years, the bubble had already popped for Double Dragon. This movie comes out just like a hair past
fight.
Too soon, too late. Too early. It comes out just like a hair past too early, too late. Like, it doesn't quite have the punchiness that it could have if, one, it would have came out maybe 4 years earlier, and two, if Technos just would have cared about continuity. This didn't just stop at the video games, the comic books, the beloved but also very cringeworthy Double Dragon cartoon series that ran, and this movie all has continuity issues. And I talked with Joe Day during the Mortal Kombat 95 review a couple months back that when the movie came out, Mortal Kombat was young enough still that though the movie made some slight changes, the game was able to adapt. They did that with some of the changes that the movie makes for Double Dragon as well, with the next game in the franchise. And then they made even additional changes, and then they went back on their changes. And at one point, they changed the main protagonist's names for no apparent reason, and then went back to Jimmy and Billy Lee. Like, there are more continuity issues with Double Dragon as a franchise than the X-Men cinematic universe ever hoped to have. And I think this is part of the reason why now, here in the year of our Lord 2026, we see such an almost an obsession with intellectual property, with protecting your image and your likeness. Just going to skirt right past all the AI protecting your image because of AI part and just go straight to how often you hear about these mega $1 billion corporations like Disney or Amazon trying to buy up and merge as many things as they can so that way they can make more money by having the most powerhouse intellectual property library possible, or in the creator economy, which I guess I do technically fall in as a content creator, as a podcaster, like being able to own your show, own your content, and be able to monetize it to give your fans what they want, to be able to use something like Kickstarter to have crowdfunded support to make the independent projects that you want to create. Even back in the 90s, though, the comic book bubble burst during that time period. That is, you know, the late 80s through the 90s is when we see the growth in the independent comic book publishers, with Image and Dark Horse and a lot of others that didn't survive the comic book crash. But this emphasis on creator owned, if you created the characters, you own the characters. We, the company, don't own the character. You own the character. This is like the big lesson I have gleaned from learning about Double Dragon, is that things could have been so different and so much better. Even though there's still games that do come out, things could have been so much better for this brand, for this IP, if the people just cared. It's so interesting that at one point in time, and this applied to comic books as well, that when it came to children's IP, superheroes, you know, video games early on, things like that, it didn't matter. All that mattered was put something else so people can buy it. Put it out, people will buy it. And it doesn't have value. It had value because it made them money, but what it was didn't have value to the people in charge. Maybe to the people who created the characters, you know, examples can fall here, but Double Dragon is such an example of, man, if you just would have cared, if Technos just would have cared about the story, about the characters, and saw it as an opportunity to make money, don't get me wrong, but in a way that was more than just dime level, quarter level, I guess I should say, with the arcades, then, you know, they could have... Double Dragon could have gone on to be just as much in the same conversation as Mortal Kombat, Street Fighter, Tekken. Double Dragon was slated to be like the fourth big one during that time period, but because of just a lack of concern for their own money-making product, it floundered. They dropped the ball. I learned a lot about Double Dragon, both the franchise and this movie, through a YouTube channel I like to follow called Matt McMuscles. This is a free plug for him. Go check it out. He has a video essay, pop culture video essay series called What Happened, where he looks at cases like this, where some big slated IP, you know, either a franchise or a specific installment, usually in the video game world, just majorly dropped the ball. And the course of that franchise took a major turn as a result of it. Along with being the grandfather of the side-scrolling beat-em-up, it is also believed that Double Dragon may have also been the grandfather of microtransactions in gameplay. You know how in some games there'll be like a shop that you can go to and you use in-universe currency or points or trade items in order to get power-ups, potions, heals, you know, whatever. Yeah, in the arcade of, I think it was Double Dragon 3, there in the arcade game, there was a shop that you could go to, but instead of using in-universe currency or points, you had to deposit quarters in order to purchase power-ups. It was microtransactions, which... To me, that is like the biggest writing on the wall that this was in a way doomed to fail. I'm happy that it's still around, due in part to the fact that I think it would be really cool to see another attempt at a Double Dragon series or movie. Lord knows that with all the continuity differences, they could very easily do a comic book series, Double Dragon across the multiverse, multiverse dragon, whatever you want to cool title you want to give it, where it just kind of deals with all of these intertwining storylines and characters and tries to like stick them all together into one actual, like, this is the official continuity now. Like, it's right there. People will eat that up, right? But let's get to the actual movie now. I'm doing a little bit of a both of a, this is Double Dragon and this is the movie. So like I said, in 1994, Double Dragon, The Power of the Medallion, or just Double Dragon for short, seriously, nobody ever until this very moment has said the full name of the movie. The full name of the movie is actually Double Dragon, The Power of the Medallion, although I did not see that on any posters. I did not see that printed in the film at all, but that is apparently the full title, but everyone just calls it Double Dragon. So this movie came out in 1994, and as I said, Technos was very hands-off with their intellectual property, so when it came time to make the movie, they were hands-off. There was no representatives from them on set overseeing the script, overseeing the production. None of them were producers. Like, it was, okay, thank you for the check. Have fun with the movie now. So what ended up becoming of this movie then? Well, it's an interesting, like, it's an interesting sundae. I keep picturing it as like an ice cream sundae of just like how we get to this, how we got this movie in the first place. Because there is this factor of like, even though it was maybe like a hair past the due date for their popularity, they're going to sign off on a movie and then be completely hands off. So then somebody had to write a story, and that somebody was Paul Dini, you know, the guy from Batman the Animated Series. And yet somehow whatever story he wrote, which I guess there's not much out there on what his story originally was, the producers and all of that didn't quite care for the story. They thought it needed some work, so they passed it on to two other guys. One of those guys who worked on the screenplay of the story being Peter Gold, you know, the guy who wrote basically all of Breaking Bad and was the co-showrunner on Better Call Saul. He gets his hands on the script and starts working on it. And then it gets over to director James Yukich, who up until this point had never directed a feature-length film, and after this point, never directed another feature-length film. Throughout the 80s, he directed music videos, all kinds of music videos, Iron Maiden, REO Speedwagon, a whole bunch for Phil Collins and Genesis. Heck, there was even a Striper video that he did. And then after this movie, he went back to music. He directed concert films, started doing a lot of like comedy specials. He did a bunch of Dennis Miller's comedy specials there in like the early 2000s. But yeah, this was like his one feature length film. And when he got the script, he looked at it and said, oh, this is a kids movie. And the producer said, no, this is a gritty action film. And to their credit, though nobody on set apparently really had any experience at all with the Double Dragon games, the producers were technically right, though video games at that point still were very much directed towards children. I mean, you're starting to get some of the preteen demo at this point as well with some of the grittier games. But heck, a year later, the Mortal Kombat film's going to come out, and it's going to be great. But as we talked about, they definitely toned down the brutality in the 90s MK films. Anyway, so Yukich sees it and goes, it's a kid's movie. Producers go, no, it's a gritty action film. Yukich stuck to his guns, though, and ended up making a family-friendly film. However, no, this story is still not done. However, once it got rated, it was slapped with a PG-13 rating. I and James Yukich both don't know why. Other than PG-13 was a fairly new rating at this point, I believe. So maybe the MPAA is still just trying to figure out, like, how to appropriately navigate this, that rating. There's no blood in this movie. It's barely intense. And there, outside of one joke, there's no language. It is a very family-friendly film, even compared to, like, how toned down the 90s MK films are going to be. Like, this is a very family-friendly film. Would I watch Double Dragon again? Yes, I would. And I would probably wait for a couple years from now when producer Cooper is like 6, 7 or so. We're past that one, so I can do it now. When he's like 6 or 7 years old, and just see if he likes it, because it is a very like family friendly movie. But when it was slapped with the PG-13 rating, Jukic said, okay, what do we need to do to like edit this so we can get the PG rating? And the producers went and just sent it out with a PG-13 rating. Now, that rating and the fact that it was technically a family film but slapped with a PG-13 rating is the reason that is usually given for why this movie bombed. It was budgeted right around $8 million, but it only pulled in half. It was like a little over $4 million. And it's because of this whole, well, the rating was off for what was supposed to be a family-friendly film. But here's the thing, folks. I don't buy that. You don't buy it either. Because we all know, yes, there are some parents who are very overprotective of what their children are allowed to watch. But then there's other parents that are like, if they want to take their kid, if their kid wants to go see a rated R movie and they want to go too, they're going to take them. When I saw Mortal Kombat 2 last month, there was like a 14-year-old kid there with his dad. My second cousin, when Logan came out, he saw that in theaters. He was like 8 when that movie came out. If somebody wants to go see a movie and the parents are cool with it being, you know, rated a little bit above the suggested rating, they're gonna go take their kid to see the movie, you know? Like, it's a guideline. It's a suggestion. Okay, rated R, maybe a little bit stronger, and obviously beyond that. But, like, you know, like PG, PG-13, it really is up to the discretion of the parent. It really might be more to do with the fact that people may not have wanted to see a Double Dragon movie by that point. That being said, one thing that you cannot take away from this movie is the cast and the acting. It's very good. It's a shame that people slept on this movie, because it's good. I don't think it's like a hidden classic or anything like that, but it's a fun movie. It's an enjoyable time. It is extremely 90s, I will tell you that. Still to this day on Rotten Tomatoes, Double Dragon rocks a lovely 13%. And a lot of people critique this movie nowadays because of the dialogue. It's just a bunch of cheesy one-liners. But here's my thing on that, folks. Just hear me out for a second. I will say, when it comes to set design for a lot of the shots and also the dialogue, the movie comes off a little bit more like a Disney Channel original movie, okay? And that could be very cringe for you. That is fine. I, for one, grew up on Disney Channel original movies. I grew up on DCOM, so there was something kind of familiar about it. Like, it definitely doesn't feel like a major motion picture. It does feel like more like a TV movie, like a DCOM, and that's fine. I mean, it's not good for theatrical releases, but it's fine for a family film. And yes, there are a lot of one-liners in this movie. You know, they're trying to appeal to kids, right? There's also this ongoing bit that the two brothers, Billy and Jimmy, have, where they look at each other and scream a lot. And that does feel very Disney Channel, and it does get a little old. But again, it's for kids. It's a movie for kids. And it was funny the first few times. Here's also the thing about one-liner dialogue. Bo Burnham has a bit in his Make Happy special where he talks about how he thinks it's weird how some people see country music as just inherently dumb, but when Bruce Springsteen writes a whole album about a turnpike, that's art. To use that here, why is it when a kid's film has a bunch of one-liners, it's cringe or bad dialogue or a bad movie? But when Schwarzenegger stabs a guy up against the wall and says, "Stick around," that's good. That's enjoyable. I get it. The family-friendly kid's film is probably going to have more one-liners, more groaners. But why is it when Stallone, Schwarzenegger, Steven Seagal do these, like, one-liners in their films that it's like cool and edgy, but when it's in a kid's movie, it's eye roll groan? I gotta watch my time because we're here at like the 20-ish minute mark. So I did mention that it's a really good cast. So let me tell you about this really good cast. First and foremost, our antagonist here is played by Robert Patrick, who is just coming off of his performance as T-1000 in Terminator 2. He was the big catch for this movie. We also have the brothers, Billy and Jimmy Lee. Billy is played by Scott Wolfe, and Jimmy is played by Mark Dacascos, who is probably most known for being the chairman in American Iron Chef, but has also been in things like Wu Assassins and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and is a real-life martial artist, and it shows. It definitely shows in this movie. The combat is there. The combat looks a lot like a Power Rangers fight, okay? It's a lot of, like, parkour, gymnastics, flipping, and some basic kicks and punches, but Mark's kicks look really good in this movie. As I said, every installment ever of Double Dragon gets different things, different continuity changes. One of those for this movie is the fact that it takes place in New Angeles. A earthquake shattered Los Angeles, and the government was like, "Yeah, good luck with all that." And now there's just like all these gangs that infiltrated New Angeles. And the local government made an arrangement where the gangs can be out at night, but not during the day. And the civilians can be out during the day, but there's a curfew. So that way the gangs can do whatever they want. None of that is in the video games, by the way. None of that. Also, this takes place in the future of 2007. Why did movies used to do that? Why is it that they would set dystopian films like 10 years down the road? Pump the ball so far down that you will be long dead before you actually get to that year in your movie. But one of the good changes for this movie, I think at least, is Marion. So Marion is the damsel in distress character in the games and the love interest. She still plays the love interest here in this movie, but she is the capable leader of a vigilante group that goes out at night to police the gangs a little bit to make sure that they're not getting into too much trouble and causing too much damage. She is played by Melissa Milano. Milano is most known for her roles in Who's the Boss, Melrose Place, and Charmed, and was one of the big movers and shakers and ralliers of the Me Too movement in 2017. She's like a real world baddie, y'all. Like she took to vigilante work in Twitter to, you know, bring down horrible people in Hollywood. Good job. So is Double Dragon a forgotten classic, an overlooked classic? No. Is it better than you remember? I think so. I genuinely think, especially in light of 2026 now, I genuinely think if you're listening to this and you have kids and you're looking for something different to put on in the summers, I know that's that was a thing for my family at least. We would watch like a certain group of movies during the summer. If you're looking for like a fun, family-friendly action film, throw this on. I think the kids will be okay watching it. And it's very accessible. It's on all of those free streaming platforms like Tubi, Roku Channel, Plex, Pluto TV. Like you'll be able to find it. Would I watch it again? Like I said, yes. Would I buy a physical media copy of this movie? Yeah, I don't think I need to. I don't think I need a copy of it. Like I said, it's pretty easily accessible. And if I did have one critique, the poster is pretty ugly. I did not care for any version of the poster that I saw online. Not, it ain't for me. But I had fun with it. Check it out. And I know there's so many big-brained nerds out there who's probably like, well, if it, you know, if it changes the continuity, and then why would I care? Bro, the continuity in Double Dragon is that there is no continuity. That's that's like the whole thing at this point. So like, who cares if they made creative changes? Like I said, I think one of them's really good. They actually like elevated their like one woman character in the story. So, you know, that's a good change. It might not be a good change that what's his face now? That Robert Patrick plays a guy who thinks he's a reincarnated Japanese warlord. That might not be a good look, but he even said that like, yeah, it wasn't very good. Everybody said, yeah, this movie wasn't very good, even though they all went and saw the Mario Bros. Movie and was like, surely to goodness we could do better than this. And they didn't think they did. I do think they did. But he did say that, like, in his career up until that point, and really virtually beyond that, like, he always plays villains, but this was like the one and only time he got to play like a fun villain, like really got to ham it up. And it shows. Thanks for listening to today's episode. If you haven't yet already, please rate and review this show wherever you get your podcasts. Pass this episode along to a friend. And check out the other great shows here on the Anazao Podcast Network, like Why I Don't Like, Page and Pixel, and my sister show, My Seminary Life. And that is it, I think. Oh, no, I got to plug the socials. You can follow the show on Instagram at Kung Fu Pizza Party and on Letterboxd Kung Fu Pizza PRTY, where you can get a review of the movie before the episode comes out. And check out my YouTube channel, Studio 219, a place for faith and pop culture. Now that's it. This has been Kung Fu Pizza Party, where I delivered high-flying action in 30 minutes or less and served up some wisdom one slice at a time.